everybody, welcome back to BadQuaker.com. I've got a very special guest with me today, one of the most interesting people I know, and it's an honor to know him. I'm just going to call him Jim, and Jim, why don't you go ahead and tell us who you are, a little about yourself, how you got to where you are today, and some of the things that that have shaped your life.
Well, thank you, Ben. I appreciate you having me on here. I'm a retired soldier. I spent a number of years in the military doing some working in the combat arms branch, mainly as a scout. On the enlisted side, saw some duty in some hostile regions. After that, after I retired, I decided I really wasn't ready for any type of quiet job. Often wonder why that is. Mm-hmm. But anyway, I decided to go into police work. Worked for a mid-sized city for 7 years. Majority of that, I was on a SWAT team and answered a lot of high-risk calls and worked patrol the majority of the time, enjoying just being out there with the people and how it can be so dead quiet and 15 seconds later you could be on the ground with somebody, you know, fighting for your life or protecting some innocent person.
Yeah.
After 9/11, I started losing my focus and started saying, you know, maybe there's other places that I could be that I could help. And because I was as angry as everyone else about this unprovoked attack on our country. So I went into private security, basically started working for other companies, Blackwater being the one that everyone's familiar with, but I've worked with others.
Yeah.
And I ended up overseas in various capacities in various countries and did some rather serious work with some serious, I guess you could call it, action going on.
Yeah, I've seen the photos, and I can attest that that it's the real deal.
Well, if there's time to take a photo, though, that means I had a breather for a minute.
Yeah.
Anyway, I went on, and after doing that, I decided I still wanted to stay in that type of work, offering basically knowledge I'd accumulated over the years, but I wanted to do it for myself instead of working for a company who in turn would contract me out to someone else. I got rid of the middleman. I started my own business, and I've been successfully doing that, I guess, just short of 5 years now, where I've only had to answer to me.
That's nice.
And I still do the same work. I work for various government agencies as far as they tell me what they want. I teach or do whatever they want me to do for a set price. And
now that's both domestic and foreign?
Yes, I'm pretty much work anywhere or do anything, provided it is for the United States and sanctioned by the United States. It's not mercenary work, per se. I really hate that term, to be honest.
Well, since you brought it up, that's a lot of people get lumped into that. Could you, for me, define how you... I know in my mind how I picture the difference, but what's the difference between private security and mercenary in your mind?
Well, again, I wouldn't know where to go, Webster's or anything, but if, say, Rwanda hired me to eliminate some bad guys in their country, to me that would be mercenary work.
Yeah.
If I work for the United States, one of its various agencies, Department of Energy, Defense, etc., State Department, I'm doing work that the United States wants done. And the contracts are that defined. They tell you exactly what you can or can't do. I agree they were looser a number of years ago, but now they're pretty specific.
Mm-hmm.
And I do exactly what is sanctioned by the United States to do, and I'm representing the United States when I do it. So that's the difference to me. It's not like I'm going to Brazil and getting hired by their Ministry of Defense to go eliminate some rebels up in the mountains.
Right.
I'm doing work that the U.S. government wants me to do.
Now, how do you feel about, say, if a private company like, say, a major aerospace company or a major oil company or something like that, hiring entirely outside of the State Department in any way, just private security, say, for an oil installation or, something like that?
I believe if work is defensive in nature, you have a right to defend yourself no matter who you are in this world. So
absolutely.
If somebody hired a legitimate company, not just thugs off the street, a legitimate, vetted, bonded company that, has some defensive capability of protecting an oil derrick or platform, I don't really have an issue with that. That's probably the way the world needs to go.
Yeah. That could probably, in my opinion, be done a lot more efficiently than, deploying military in places.
Oh, I agree. We do not have the military to pull guard duty on everything in the world.
Exactly. Or police.
We just don't have it, and it's not cost efficient at all.
Or police 200-300 countries.
Man, you realize they're giving me a paycheck for the rest of my life for retiring for work I did a number of years ago? We can't afford to do that. We'd have to triple the size of the military to guard everything in the world.
Yeah.
The thing about a contractor is, if you need me for 6 months, I know as a contractor, at the end of 6 months, I need to go find a new job.
Right.
And I don't cry over it.
Right. Let's kick this over to Somalia and the pirate situation. What do you feel about that? The media's kind of dropped the ball on it, but the situation's still there.
That's something we could control both short-term with deploying all the friendly nations' navies there and patrolling the heck out of it and stopping there and boarding every boat until they decide to move on. And then for the long term, private security. Put people who are trained, who have the skills and the knowledge of when or when not to use them on these various vessels so that when they go through there, the pirates will have to think twice about whether they wish to die that day.
Yeah. Let me switch gears with you and ask you about America. We've gone through a lot in the last, 10 years, but the last few years have been rough. And I'm not specifically talking about any particular administration or any particular political party, but just the general feel and the general direction that America's going. What do you feel about that?
I'm a little scared. I'm a little worried. A lot worried. I don't feel America is on the foundations that we started with. I think we're so far from what the Founding Fathers intended. And, of course, there's always going to be one side that says, things evolve, technology takes over. But it doesn't really matter. The same basic rights should be there. And now there's all these stipulations with every right.
Mm.
Okay, I'm really mad that I've served all this time, 30-plus years, and for me to put a 10.5-inch barrel on one of my AR-15s, I've got to send the government a $200 stamp and tell them where the gun's going to be stored and all kinds of little stupid stuff about that. If I haven't, in this time, improperly used one of my weapons, why do I have to tell you where this one's going to go?
Yeah.
And just things like that. Second Amendment says I should be able to, keep and bear arms. That's pretty much what it says. It doesn't say a whole lot else beyond that.
Right.
So, do I agree that felons shouldn't carry guns? Yes, but I also agree that felons shouldn't be out on the street again where they can buy guns. So, there's just things like that. I think that our House and our Congress are way off track. I think we need term limits, and that needs to be done immediately. I think you hit the 12-year mark as a senator, you're over. You cannot run again until you've waited a full, 6 years, another, till someone else has held that slot.
Yeah.
I think same with congressmen. Basically the same rules that the president has. And that's just to keep any individuals from becoming so powerful. I mean, he's dead now. Shouldn't talk about him, but Ted Kennedy, come on.
Yeah. Spent his lifetime in there.
Yeah. I mean, did he really have his finger on the pulse of America, having been so elevated above it and up there? He already came from rich royalty to begin with. I mean, he really didn't know what the people needed.
Right.
Yeah. And I don't fault him for being rich, but I fault him for staying in office so long. Because let's just think about this, Ben. I've got millions of dollars, okay? So I run for Senate, okay, because I want to help my country. I do a term.
Mm-hmm.
I do another term. Okay, I can live with that. But after that, you're not worried about helping your country anymore.
Right.
Pretty much into just having the power that complements the money you have, and you can just
exactly
whatever you want to be in this world.
Yep. You like the prestige and the power.
Yeah.
Yep. Ah, man. What do you think about the future? What do you other than term limits, do you see any other solutions that could sort of bump us in the right direction or dramatically take us in the right direction?
This will hurt everybody in America, but an immediate balanced budget amendment. We cannot spend money we don't have. If I got to live that way, then why can't America live that way?
Yeah.
I don't get it.
Now, you know that would hit two things pretty hard. That would hit this all the Social Security and Medicare people, and that would hit the military.
Let me tell you about Social Security. You want a rant?
Go.
Okay. If I worked 40 years and made $40,000 a year, never made a pay raise, okay, and the stock market stayed at its historic average of somewhere in the 11% to 12%, at 65, or when my 40-year mark was over, the government should hand me a check for $5.5 million. Yep. Currently, they might give me an $1,800 or $1,900 a month until I die. Not a penny goes on to my is left as inheritance, whereas if they gave me my $5.5 million, if I died the next day, my kids would have $5.499 million to pass on to. So, but Social Security is broken.
Yeah.
It's not going to be fixed because there is no president going to want to tackle that because it's going to hurt all of America to get it fixed.
Yeah.
So right now, here's why I'm ready to just cut my losses. Stop taking Social Security out of me, and I'll worry about myself when I'm too old to work.
Yeah. Like just a cutoff date, like 50 or something, and just say, look, if you're younger than 50, wake up, save.
Yeah.
And if you're older than 50, well, you know, I don't know.
And your other point was about defense. Well, let me get to this. We need to have a strong defense. But the word is defense.
Yeah.
I don't think we need to be deployed in Afghanistan anymore. We went over there. We were all into the retaliation after 9/11. I was 100% aboard. Heck, I make my living off of this, Ben. But 10 years in one country, what? And the Taliban are stronger today than they were 5 years ago?
Yeah.
We're not accomplishing anything. We're doing nothing. Get out of there and bring it back and tell Afghanistan, okay, we've given you billions. We've given you some technology, some infrastructure, power plants, water, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's your problem.
Yeah.
And if your problem's to spill outside the border, we're going to jump on it like a cat on a mouse.
Mm-hmm.
So keep it home, because if it reaches our border, you know, we're coming back, and we're coming back with a little bit more force than we used the last time.
You think it's about time to tell Korea and Japan and Germany and England the same thing?
All of them. There are people in America, and I know this from running this cop, that legitimately want to be, you know, but aren't eating very well, okay? And it's
right.
Just because they're very feeble. You know, they might have, that might be trying to take care of their sick mother and trying to go to school and trying to keep a job, and their car is broken. Some guy's telling them that their tax on their car is $800 this year, so they've suspended their license for not paying for it or something.
Yeah.
Little crap like that. We need a lot more states' rights. What is right for some clown in California cannot possibly be right for me in Tennessee.
Yeah, absolutely.
Each state, which has more of your finger on the pulse of what's going on, should be able to make those decisions.
A mutual friend of ours, I won't say his name, but you'll probably know who I'm talking about, because I'm going to hopefully interview him, and I'll let him speak for himself on the topic. But he was talking to me, we were just real casual, and he was talking about city-states like Hong Kong and places like that, where a very small location can govern itself very efficiently, and the economy just grows like crazy. And he was kind of inferring that that would possibly be a better future for America than having, you know, one city in Washington, D.C., and a bunch of really, really weak individual state capitals trying to dictate to people from Montana and Tennessee and California and New York and Florida. You know, his inclination was that not only could not only could New York State govern itself better than Washington, D.C., but New York City could govern itself better than New York State.
Well, that's very interesting, and I can't say that I'm in disagreement with that right now, just thinking about it. I'd have to look into it a little further. I am into the states having far more rights. The rights we had originally.
Yeah.
You know, you don't fall in line, we take away your highway fund. I'm all for it. Hey, take away my highway fund. Go ahead. You know? But the states, you know, they kowtow to it. But it's very interesting. I think that might work for some locales because New York City's different than the rest of New York State.
Yeah, very different.
There's just a huge difference in the people, what they need, you know, what makes them tick.
Yeah.
So that's an interesting concept.
Jim, I wanted to ask you, you have experience with the SWAT teams. There's kind of two ways of thinking right now. One is that the nation's crime is in a pretty scary situation, and the other thought is that the nation's law enforcement is in kind of a scary situation, and there's an over-policing, especially with the use of SWAT teams. Do you have anything you wanted to mention about that?
Yeah. The term SWAT is so... I mean, you have such a degree. It's not like the military where if you're an infantry platoon in Korea, light on foot, meaning there's no vehicles, and you're an infantry platoon in Germany, and then you're an infantry platoon in Afghanistan, all being light, meaning they're non-mechanized. Their TONE, or their tables of organization and equipment, are identical. They've all had the same training. They might have some additional specific training to the region they're in, mountain training or water training, depending on where they're at, but they're identical. If you're talking about SWAT teams in America, you know, the most rural county out there might have what they call a SWAT team, but it might be Bubba and Fred are put together and told they're a SWAT team, and so their level of competence is seriously different than what you might meet in Miami, New York, L.A., as far as training and weapons and what they know to do and when they're called out as far as procedures go. So,
but they have the uniform.
You gotta bear with me on that.
They have the uniform and the equipment. Doesn't that qualify them?
I can equip myself for a couple thousand dollars and look really scary, but it doesn't mean I know anything.
Right.
So, yeah, I almost think, and I'm not into too much regulation, but each state, down to state, I'm not talking federal level, but if I have to be state certified to be a police officer, it's not that I was a police officer in a particular city, I also have to be, if you're a police officer in any district in a particular state, at least in this area, I'm also basically qualified for the whole state. Well, I think that additionally, if you're going to form a SWAT team, all those officers should get state certified so that we at least have a minimum level of where everyone's at. You know, we've established something that says, well, he's had X number of hours of training, he knows how to use this weaponry, et cetera. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
So at least establish a baseline that we know that everyone is met. You know, if they get beyond that, that's great. In some places, your cities and larger are going to have a lot more incidents and need more training.
Mm-hmm.
But we should get everyone to. But the sad truth is, Ben, is there's just nothing standardized across the nation or even across the state. Now, as far as whether they need to be used or not, well, yes, I do think that SWAT teams are needed. No, I don't think they need to be used as often as they are. But the problem anymore with a response, okay, basically, a typical SWAT call is this. An officer responds to a call. It could be a domestic. It could be, you know, a domestic disturbance. It could just be saw a man with a gun. Somebody reported he saw a man with a gun in his backyard. Little things trigger these little events.
Mm-hmm.
Anything that makes the responding patrol officer, you know, the hair on the nape of the neck perk up, generally becomes a two-officer call. So you got a couple officers showing up. There's already reports of a gun or a domestic disturbance, which everyone knows is the most violent calls there are. So you get there and you hear a noise and you bang on the door and the door is locked. And you might hear, hey, you go away or I'll shoot you or something like that. Well, in my early days of patrol, it was, okay, there's two of us. you know, let's keep some good observation on this bill, and if we see our chance, we're going to go in and end this. Nowadays, it's more, an officer won't get a couple houses away, and they'll just start observing, and then, you know, they have no real answers to give, and so it becomes a SWAT call because of the unknown.
Yeah.
And I didn't describe it as well as I wanted to, but what I'm saying, the individual patrol officer is so scared of liabilities anymore in lawsuits, of which I went through a couple myself for various deadly force engagements, that they're scared to actually be policemen.
Yeah, it's the idea of Andy Griffith is completely of somebody locally just settling a problem. Legally, it can't be done because there's so many levels of lawyers waiting to sue somebody over it.
Yeah, so a call gets elevated beyond, you know, it escalates to the level where a SWAT team is called out. Now, let me tell you, SWAT guys really don't want to go out because, you know, 90% of calls end up with you laid in the grass in the cold for 6 hours, and then the guy walked out the front door with his hands up.
Yeah.
So you just froze, you just, you know, maybe... You're tired. You just got woke up. You just came off your shift when you got called out, or something like that. So, don't think like I hate the way the movies portray SWAT teams. Cause namely, basically, they almost have them faceless, nameless thugs. And it's not really. They're regular guys that work on SWAT, and it's hard for people to understand that. I do think they're overused. I think that there needs to be a minimal level of training that's, you know, some state-sanctioned level before you can actually have a SWAT team, and every officer on that team will have completed that training prior to being allowed on that team. Now, almost any agency say, well, we have SWAT training, but I've seen the difference. In my city here, we trained the surrounding counties' people for our SWAT, and we were state-sanctioned. But there were other counties that didn't want to pay the fee or didn't want to go to state, and they just formed their own SWAT teams based on, hey, we're now a SWAT team.
Yeah.
It would be no different than you and I, Ben, deciding we were going to become Wall Street bankers.
Yeah.
And doing it.
Yeah, the only difference is we got federal funding with the Homeland Security stuff pumping money into those agencies.
Yeah. The money's there that it used to not be, and that's why you have so many more so-called SWAT teams. So I agree that some regulation, and I hate regulation, but when we're talking live weapons kicking indoors, I think maybe some restraint is in order.
Well, something that comes, and you have far more experience than I could even imagine, but so correct me at any point in this, but this is just my summary, but it seems to me like you take a guy and you give him this equipment and you give him a certain level of training, but with training, the more repetition you do something in training, the more confident you become in the action, in the activity. And without getting into any specific cases that are floating around right now or that have happened in the past or whatever, what I have seen is that very often the overuse of force, whether by a SWAT team or by an individual cop that gets, you know, plastered all over YouTube or something like that, to me, I watch it and I think, that guy was scared. That cop reacted like that, or that SWAT team went in the way they did because they were terrified. And I'm not saying that they're cowards or something like that, but what I'm saying is there are so many variables, and their training may or may not have equipped them to go into something like that. And again, with repetition of training, you get to the point where you can do things without thinking about them. But without that repetition of training, you get there, and you panic.
Well, there's one thing that can't be trained into you, and that's your ability to still think while you do things. I know the old mantra was, you know, you don't have time to think, you only have time to react. Well, that might be if you're doing a parachute jump and you got 8 seconds before you hit the ground, and what you do next is basically instinctive.
Mm-hmm.
And you've had a bad shoot and you need to pull your secondary. But if we're talking, you've entered a house, every house is different. There might be a kid in this house and no kid in that house. You cannot, no matter all the training you get, yes, you should be able to pull your weapon up, pull the trigger, and hit a target dead center mass. 99.9, and the law enforcement requirement is way up there, 99.99, because you cannot miss. If you miss, you hit innocence.
Right.
But you can't program in a person's, I guess, psyche into whether they're going to be scared or not. Everybody's scared.
Yeah.
But your ability to think through it. So you can. I don't even believe that that's a defense. If some cop did something that he was trained to do and he did it perfectly, but he did it on the wrong person or the wrong, in the wrong manner, there's still no excuse.
Yeah.
You know, he should be held to the degree that, that anyone else is held. But the other thing is, people need to realize cops aren't superhumans.
Yeah.
They're you and I.
Yeah.
And there are going to be mistakes, and I know that there are some very tragic mistakes out there. But the alternative, you know, may not be any better. So I don't know. Don't feel unqualified maybe to even answer it, except I do believe that there needs to be properly trained SWAT teams, that a certain set of circumstances would deploy them, and beyond that, a certain set of circumstances would authorize their use beyond the deployment to where they actually go and do something involving deadly force.
Well, let me ask you this. What would you think about private SWAT teams that a county or a sheriff's department, say, or even a police force could call up? And that way, if that SWAT team was not professional to the level that they needed to be, that company could be sued and taken down, and they could have liability insurance or whatever. But like any other company, if it's incompetent, it could be crushed by the market.
Well, that's an interesting concept. I don't know if a lot of counties are going to be able to afford to just pay a guy on a retainer to lay around and wait to be called, or several guys or whatever. I do believe that there are plenty of recently retired either officers or military persons that could attend a certain bit of training similar to whatever the private company put them through that would met a certain level, and they could be on call, especially in your more metro areas where there's plenty of those guys laying around watching football.
Mm-hmm.
But I would have to see a model of that, because I still think that the agency would be liable, because if I hired Ben's company to go in and do SWAT work in the city that I'm the mayor of,
yeah,
I'm still kind of liable, aren't I?
Yeah,
if
well, at least
something wrong.
At least to the voters.
Yeah.
if nothing else, the media would eat you.
Back to what's more important to politicians anyway, stuff like that.
Yeah.
So I think the concept could work. I think that it is feasible. I'd like to see a model of it or a write up on that.
Yeah.
Give a qualified answer.
Well, we're probably getting pretty close to our time limit. Is there anything else that you wanted to add to that? As far as let me throw it at you this way. A lot of my audience goes everywhere from. You know, there might be some liberals or conservatives. I know there's libertarians, and there's even some anarchists.
Uh-huh.
There are a lot of folks, especially among the liberals. I'm sorry, among the libertarians and the anarchists, that really kind of view police and military and even what they consider mercenaries, which is anybody. From the true mercenary all the way to private security, even to they practically throw mall cops into this same group. But they just see all those people as evil demons with like three heads and fangs. And is there anything you can say to those people that will calm their reaction to seeing a cop or seeing somebody in uniform?
It's so tough because many people only need or encounter a cop when they're in the worst of times, you know?
Yeah.
And the cop, I mean, the one that shows up may not be the perfect one for you, but he's the one you got. And so a lot of people, okay, a cop gave me a ticket for speeding yesterday. I was 5 over. Big deal, you know? Why is he out there busting real people? You don't know if that cop was sent to do that radar duty, because I tell you, most cops don't like sitting around running a radar gun and pulling over people with jobs and giving them tickets. Usually those are directed actions. It's not like, hey, I feel like pulling over people all day. So what people just need to understand is if we're going to have any level of order, that there least needs to be that kind of knowledge that in the background, what I'm doing might get me cited, arrested, charged, or held, detained, etc., because it's against the law. And if you realize that the cop's out there doing his job, now, there's bad cops. Never going to say there isn't. Even go with the 10% rule. There, you know, with the term bad being relative, because bad could mean really bad or just bad meaning lazy.
Or even bad having a bad day.
Having a headache. Thing. I ran patrol. The call I just left could have been a kid that had been smacked so hard by his father that he had blood coming out of his ears. And I took care of that arrest, and I got 4 hours left in my shift.
Yeah. And you got
to... I get to your house, and you want to tell me the neighbor's dog is barking, and I say, okay, well, here's the procedure for dealing with a neighbor's dog, but no, you want me to go beyond that. Okay, so I go talk to the neighbor about the dog, and I come back. And, I mean, and you just give me a hard time. Eventually, I snap.
Yeah.
And I don't snap meaning I go crazy. It's just I might say something a little more curt than I would have the day before, the next shift, the next day.
Yeah.
So we're humans. And I tell you, you can always make things cooler by being calm yourself because a cop will respond to your actions.
Yeah.
He will treat you the way you treat him. If he doesn't, he's not a good officer.
Hey, here's a really, before we wrap this up, let me throw just a curveball at you. I hope it's not too much of a curveball, but... this is just from my experience. You've seen me. We've met and shook hands and talked, but I'm a big, ugly, hairy, fat, bearded, long-haired, just monster of a guy.
Yeah, I know what you look like.
And I can be sitting on my Harley in the middle of a construction zone, you know, waiting, just sitting there in 100-degree weather, just sweating my butt off. And a cop will get out of his car. He's just sitting over there. You know, he's on duty just sitting there in case somebody does something stupid. And I have had cops get out of their car, walk all the way into traffic, and walk up and start talking to me on my bike. And it's like they see me, and there's an immediate connection. Like, hey, there's a guy I can talk to. But if I walk into the mall... there's a good possibility that the mall cop is going to walk around about 15, 20 feet behind me and watch me.
Yeah.
It's really a weird thing. I'm not condemning one or glorifying the other, but it's just a strange thing to me, this reaction that I've had. Do you have any comment on that whatsoever?
Well, I can't speak for what a training a mall cop has had. I don't know why you even use the term cop, because they're not... foreign police officers, they're security guards. They're no different than a security guard guarding a bank or whatever. So their level of training may not be there. Truthfully, if I was worried about Ben walking in my mall, I wouldn't make it obvious I was watching Ben. You know, because it would be too easy for you to just go on somewhere else if Ben was going to do something bad that day. But as far as the officer walking across traffic and coming to talk to you, were you saying talk to you, or was he confronting you about some perceived law violation?
Oh, no. They were in. This has happened to me more than once. Mm-hmm. And each time they came up and they were just like they knew me from old times, and they were, you know, hey, do you believe this heat? You know, it was like we were old buddies or something. It was almost like there was some kind of connection that they felt comfortable to walk past all the cars to walk up to my Harley.
It's all about the human factor again. We have beliefs, values, and norms that we grow up with. And, you know, people think, okay, the biker dude, and other people think, oh, the bikers. So, and me, I think, okay, whenever I see a group of motorcyclists go by, it's like, cool, they're going to an event. They're doing a poker ride and raising money for kids. I don't think, hey, they're riding through a neighborhood to see who they can rape next. So there are people that still have that perception.
Mm-hmm.
And it's all based on, but I'll be honest, all them years of running the streets, I never once took a motorcyclist into custody that was riding a traditional American motorcycle. We'll go that way.
Favoritism.
No, I had nothing to do with it. It was just, first of all, they're not out there racing.
Yeah.
You know, and generally, maybe this just isn't a big year for it. I know for a fact that there's an Outlaws safe house in town, but it's just that. It's a safe house. It's very quiet. Nothing happens there. So we could never do anything about a place that had no activity.
Yeah.
So we lived with it. We had a happy understanding of each other. So whereas the gangbangers are running around doing things and hurting innocent people every day. So that's where our focus went.
I hate to, can I stretch this out for one more question?
Yeah.
I hate to just keep dragging this on, but this is such a rare opportunity that I get that. You're mentioning the difference there between the actual violent gangbangers that need police to do something about them, and other people who are maybe doing questionable things, but they're, you know, but it's not the violent situation. And what is your opinion about? I don't want to specifically say the war against drugs, although I want to include that, but also things like. You know, they've been raiding Amish farms over raw milk, and they've been raiding, nurseries over flower bulbs that didn't have the right paperwork involved. And I'm not saying, I say they, it's different agencies, usually alphabet agencies that are doing this, fishing game raided somebody over flower bulbs. And the it was a different alphabet agency that raided over the Amish raw milk.
Are you talking about an actual raid involving physical insertion into a building and making a lot of noise and telling people to, well, let me see your hands and all that stuff?
In the case of the Amish milk, they didn't. In the case of the mom and pop operation with the flower bulbs, that is how they did it. There was a immigration raid, and now I kind of understand immigration because those can get dangerous. But there was an immigration raid or a series of them in Miami on barbershops, where they didn't actually arrest anybody. They just went in hard, put everybody down on the floor, ruffled through all the paperwork, made sure everybody was a citizen, and then left. And it was. It has the appearance that it was just hassling the Cuban community, but
yeah, I get it. I disagree with raids for purposes that aren't immediate need of public safety. If you get my drift,
exactly.
If you're doing something with milk, okay. do we need a raid? I mean, do we need a raid? Do we need that type of? Resources used? Do we need to put that kind of public image out there? I don't know. No, we don't need it. That's just crazy, Ben.
Well, my argument in that is that you actually endanger law enforcement when you get people used to this as being the response of the government. You actually radicalize certain groups within the country that otherwise would be relatively harmless and docile. Maybe they're nuts, but they would be relatively harmless. But this kind of thing radicalizes them, kind of what...
I agree.
Kind of drags up the kind of hate that happens in the Middle East when we stomp around over there.
Agree. I saw it in Iraq. I saw it in police work. You kick in a door because Joe Blow has 3 unpaid speeding tickets, and you scare a 5-year-old girl. That's in her mind the rest of her life.
Yeah.
You know, that same guy will leave that house and go to McDonald's. You can stop him in or out.
Yeah.
I mean, there's just, stop when he leaves the door or send him a little hate letter. If you don't come in, you're going to end up with additional charges, things like that. So there's more that can be done in a civil manner that won't turn so many people against law enforcement, against the military and what we're doing overseas. And things like that. Of course, I don't know what we're doing overseas anymore, but
yeah,
that's what I'm trying to say.
Right.
So, yeah. Yeah, I know right now that even if they suspected one of my teenagers of some heinous violation, if it wasn't an immediate danger to public safety and my 4- and 8-year-old had to watch that go down,
yeah.
I'd be pretty upset.
Yeah.
Right? She was building a bomb and the trigger was going off in 3 seconds, I'm all for it. Kick the door down, make my teenager come out of her room.
Yeah.
But, you know, there's silliness going on. It's beyond what our founding fathers wanted to happen. And I keep going back to that because I'm a believer in that.
Well, Jim, I really want to thank you. I appreciate your time, and I appreciate you talking to me.
Okay. Well, Ben, it's been interesting. Not how I spend my normal Saturday afternoon, but it's good. I got my little rant in, so I'm good for a week.
Good. I hope so. Let me give my sign-off stuff here. This is Ben Stone with BadQuaker.com. My guest today has been Jim, and I really appreciate you listening today. And be sure and check us out at BadQuaker.com. We've got a bunch of other podcasts, and we've got some articles written by various different writers. And we'd appreciate any feedback that you have, either on this podcast or on any of the other stuff. Just drop me a message at ben@badquaker.com, or you can get a hold of the admin there at badquaker@badquaker.com. And I appreciate you listening. Jim, thanks a lot for coming on with me.
Okay, Ben.
Thanks a lot, folks. Goodbye.
Bye.